through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number two of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Boy, that first hour just flew by. Is it the weather? Is that what it is? I mean, the last two days, weather has been absolutely dynamite around here for the first time in what, like 4 months, maybe even more. I mean, it's one of those things where when you have great weather after so long of just having overcast and rain, you forget what to do with yourself, and you forget the mental effect that it can have on you. It's crazy.
It is a downer. It's a downer.
Like, wait, what am I doing with myself? It's nice out.
I wanted it to rain yesterday because I wasn't doing anything, and so I didn't want to feel guilty
about
that.
You wanted an excuse?
Right. I wanted it to pour down rain because either way, I was going to be inside all day watching TV.
It's a beautiful thing. It's still freezing cold outside,
but you're right.
I will take the sun all day, every day.
God, just a dose of sunshine makes such a difference.
Well, and it makes a big difference for, you know, people that are trying to propose to others, you know, like our guy Curtis Rogers.
Okay, here's the question. If you are dating somebody in the office, especially it's you know, long term, it's serious, it's going on for like 2 years. Mm-hmm. Is it strange to not let anybody know?
I think, you know, it depends. If you get your feelers out there and you have the connects, you know.
What, do you mean to spread the word for you?
No, not spreading the word, but, you know.
No.
I'm considering starting an office gossip girl blog.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Inspired by this situation.
See, Raj, Curtis, yeah. our faithful board op and my best friend.
Controversial.
My best friend,
Jake's jealous,
did not tell me that for 2 years he's been dating a very, very nice young lady here in the office, and he is now engaged.
Woo!
To said lady.
Let's go.
Yay!
Curtis Rogers. Yeah, baby.
I'm planning the engagement party.
We all just found out about it today or yesterday, whatever it was, on Facebook. So congrats to both of them. We adore both of them. But why didn't you share that with us before? You just didn't feel like it?
It's like a celebrity reveal.
Yeah. It's kind of like a midnight album drop. You know?
Yeah.
Like no one was expecting.
And now everyone's talking about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
It literally blew my mind. Curtis sent a text last night, and I couldn't stop talking about her, thinking about her for like 2 hours. It came out of nowhere.
He sent you a text?
You had to give your wife, Brooke, I need a moment.
Seriously, she was trying to talk to me about something, and I was like, I'm really sorry right now. Like, I know you're saying something important to me, but like, I still can't get over the fact that, did you, like, Curtis, he just got engaged. Remember I just said that to you like 10 minutes ago?
Wait,
like,
did you find out he was dating in the same breath?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing. Yeah. We've done a whole night show together for 6 months. I had no idea.
How long, Stacey, have you
Secret
known
life.
That they were together?
I say nothing.
Have you known longer than a couple of days?
I can't say anything, Tom.
What are you sure you can? The cat's out of the bag.
Yeah.
I can say nothing.
All right,
I would say there were probably only like 4 or 5 people that knew like from the very start. From when we dated to when we got engaged yesterday.
But how did they know?
They were kind of there
when it happened.
Yeah, as we started.
I see.
We worked on, you know, it actually, Hawks Live is where it started a couple of years ago.
Gotcha. So. You know what's funny? I remember her actually like leaving you a gift or something one day. I remember
like
that.
Probably donuts or something.
Yeah, I remember that being a thing, but then it kind of just went away.
That's when it really became.
Curtis, that's how you should have proposed. Yeah. Shove the ring into a donut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shove the ring into the donut.
So from our text thread has come Jake wanting to ordain the wedding. No, that's not how it says.
Officiate the wedding. I am licensed. I have done it once before.
And Curtis is seriously considering it. I don't know how your families will feel.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know about that, but
I think you should let it happen.
There have been probably like 4 or 5 people already that have offered to do it.
But I mean, is it a tough choice? And then
it's true.
And then I'm planning all of the parties. I have a couple themes ironed out. One is going to be under the sea.
Yeah, I got a feeling, Stacey, that none of these, you know, themes or parties that
who
you're
else is
trying
planning
to
the
plan
parties
is not going to come.
It's true.
What's planning the parties?
How many parties do you need?
Well, you have the engagement party, which I'm planning now.
This is all. A bit
and then
much.
You have the bachelor and bachelorette parties, and then you have the wedding shower. So those four are before the wedding.
Oh my God!
Yeah, Curtis is just shaking his head. He's,
I know.
What are you,
Curtis? Let me ask you: have you been? Are you going to live with your parents still?
No, God no.
Do you right now?
Do I right now?
Yeah.
In the moment, yes. But
you live with your parents. So yeah. You guys are going to get your own place.
Yes.
Well, C. Rogers has been smart, saving money, man.
Yeah,
like,
you
let's
have.
Go.
Yeah.
Stacking the checks.
Yeah.
Good for you, man. I mean. If you
you got to get your folks to move out here.
I do.
Because then you can move in with them. One less thing to worry about. No,
you know
rent.
What?
That
is great, great advice. If you're like in your late teens, early 20s right now, and you're not planning on moving away from the area where your parents live, live with them as long as you can and save as much money as you can. It's the best thing you can do for yourself.
Well, I was,
honest to God.
While I was playing with the Hawks, that's what we did. Brooke and I, we stayed there for one. We didn't know if we were going to be moving somewhere else at some point soon,
right.
So didn't make much sense to invest in a place. But yeah, it was great. We got to save some money, and it was good.
All right, I need to admit, I was not in the sports pit when we went over this topic before the show. We're talking a little Seahawks now, by the way. The question I see on my show sheet: are we too close to the Seahawks to objectively grade their recent drafts? Are you saying that we're biased?
Is that
the question we're addressing here?
Well, basically, yeah. I think that sometimes we get so close and we know this team so well that when we look at some of these drafts, we go, yeah, okay, this fills a need, this fills a need. Okay, we can see how, you know, this draft was a smart move for the Seahawks. But when it comes down to these grades and we see these grades and the Seahawks are ranked dead last in the NFC West, and, you know, I think some people have some shock to that, right? Like, well, what about DK Metcalf and you know, some of these other guys and Cody Barton and let's see, we got Ugo Amadi and let's look at Ben Burkervin and guys that have contributed on special teams, Travis Homer. They've all been good players for us, but have they been true impact players this roster?
I think that this list you have in front of me here, San Francisco, I mean, I don't know so much about Arizona and the Rams drafts, but a C-plus sounds about right for what Seattle did last year. Ugo Amadi and Ben Burkervin and Cody Barton, I mean, outside of special teams, barely had any impact whatsoever.
At the end
of the year, Barton had to play a little bit more, and I thought actually started to grasp the game and the speed of the game nicely. But overall, the impact on what they did, I mean, in terms of wins and losses, he wasn't like a key player or anything.
No, not at all. The only impact player that you had was DK Metcalf that played throughout the entire year on one of your main units, offense, defense, and was a major impact player for you.
I thought Marquise Blair was a great pick. And I loved where I thought they were going with that, and then it didn't exactly work out this past year. Maybe it will next year. But, yeah, I mean, that didn't materialize either.
I actually don't mind the analysis of it, which is the way that I approached it in the first place was, does every team go in with the exact same goal if you don't have the same draft capital? So it's easy to go in if you're the 49ers and you have the second overall pick and you're saying we want to get difference makers right away. Then, yeah, the goal of your draft is to get difference makers. And if you don't get that, then it feels like you failed your draft. If obviously every team enters wanting to get difference makers, but if you're going in trying to get difference makers and you're like the Seahawks before your trade of Frank Clark, you had four picks, how many difference makers can you get? Do you trade up and you leave with one or two guys? Or do you do what Seattle did, which is make a big trade of Frank Clark and then turn, I think, what became five picks into 11? And so on the one hand, you look at it and you say, oh, you made 11 selections. Wow, holy cow, from four picks? That's insane. But I understand the follow-up question that Jake kind of brings up with his thing, which is, you know, if you're local and you're looking at it, you're saying, yeah, Cody Barton was great on special teams. Ugo Amadi was great on special teams. And those are all holes that you needed. But if you're a national audience and you're looking at the Seahawks, there's one name you know from this draft class, and it's DK Metcalf.
That's exactly
out of
right.
11 picks.
And with 11 picks, you'd think that you might strike gold more often.
Right. And here's my part that I saw a tweet from somebody that I thought was funny, and they labeled the last three drafts and the hits, the quote-unquote hits that happened. Shaq Griffin, okay, I give you that. Chris Carson, I'll give you that. David Moore, are we going to really classify that as a hit? Will Dissly, I love Will Dissly, but how much has Will Dissly played for the Seattle Seahawks? And the answer is he hasn't played very much at all. I love him, but I don't know if you can quite put him as a hit category because he hasn't even played a full season for you.
Yeah, he's been in 10 games.
Right? I mean, you can't label a hit Will Dissly as a hit when the guy hasn't been remotely – he hasn't even finished half a season yet. And DK Metcalf, hit. Cody Barton, I think he's a good depth piece player. I don't know if he will be a full-fledged starter for the Seahawks at one point down the line, but so far I like him, and I think he's a good contributor. I don't know if you label him as a hit. He's not a starter making a major impact at every single game. Marquise Blair, question mark, he could be. He could become one. And Puna Ford. Puna Ford, to me, like, it's great value, but is he a guy that you look at moving forward? We had some hype for him moving into this year about what he could potentially be, but that didn't follow through. I'll list off some misses, and these are all first three round, second, and third round misses. LJ Collier, Rashad Penny, and I say Penny because of injury history, okay, so far. Malik McDowell, Ethan Posick, Delano Hill, Naj Jones, Amara Darbo. That's a lot of misses in the first three rounds.
First, second, and third round.
First, yep. Second, and third round, where you can absolutely find guys in those rounds that can be quality football players and starters. That's what you're hoping to pick in those first three rounds.
McDowell, I often don't forget about. It's just you forget how much draft capital was attached to him. He was your first overall pick in that draft, second round. With Penny, I think you started to see him come along, but it's still, people were already panning them for taking a running back in the first round that wasn't a generational talent like Saquon Barkley is.
Right. So it's just, it's one of those things. You look at the draft and you see how it's shaped up. I think the attitude in terms of what a hit is, they've got to, in this year's draft, they have to get hits. They have to get guys who are going to start and make quality impact for them on the field.
Four down territory.
This is Four Down Territory
with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Do the Seattle Dragons already have a quarterback controversy?
Quarterback controversy.
That's enough.
The Seattle Dragons, it's going to be interesting to see what they end up doing, because I'll tell you what, in the first two games that we saw from Brandon Silvers, it's just not been enough. In week one, it's one thing where, hey, the butterflies are going. You've only been practicing for so long with each other, and you're just trying to get a feel. But now you go to week two, and you're playing at home, and you've got guys wide open down the field, and you're just extremely inaccurate and not moving the chains. Then it becomes a problem. I mean, they didn't get any semblance of offense going until the third quarter, and then even after that, it really sputtered. They've got guys around them. They've got Keenan Reynolds. Kaysen Williams comes back. I think it will help them out. They've got some good tight ends. They've got the pro kid, who I think is really good in the slot. And they've got the best running back tandem in the XFL. So overall, I think they've got good pieces around Silvers. This isn't like it's a bad offense overall, but they've got to start expecting more from Silvers and expecting results before, you know, they start making a change. And I think BJ Daniels should be ready to go to play in week three if things don't change in a hurry.
Are those the only two quarterbacks they're carrying?
That's correct.
Okay. Second down. Stacey, is there another free agent defensive end who could draw interest from Seattle?
There is one, although it remains to be seen whether or not he's going to be retained by his team. I'm sure they're going to make a big effort to do so, and that's Chris Jones out in Kansas City with the Chiefs. So you guys remember him. He was another name thrown in there as like a potential MVP candidate that maybe should have gotten the award outside of Patrick Mahomes. There were a couple guys that people mentioned, but Chris Jones had three really important passes defended in that game. He is only 25 years old, has a market value of $19.2 million per year. So not the most expensive defensive end contract out there, but certainly going to be a pricey option. So I think that he would be a guy where if the Seahawks can't land Jadeveon Clowney, people start looking at some of these guys that are young, really talented, and could also be your priciest defensive contract on that line, and one of those guys could be Chris Jones. I'm sure the Kansas City Chiefs would love to retain him. He can play inside and outside. He's playing on the other side of Frank Clark over there, and they probably really like the pass rush they've got going on. He had 9 sacks in 2019, more than anyone else on the Seahawks by 5 sacks. That last year, 15.5 in 2018, which is more than Frank Clark had in 2018. So again, I would see this as being a potential option for Seattle. It's a little tricky, and Jake, maybe you can help me out with this one. Would he play a more similar position to LJ Collier as opposed to what a guy like Frank Clark would play in Seattle's system?
That is correct. He wouldn't be a true edge rusher. He'd be a guy that, what you were hoping LJ Collier could be, move inside, outside. He's very elite in terms of rushing the passer from both sides of it, defensive end and defensive tackle.
Right, so if the Chiefs can't find a way to retain him, I'm sure there will be many teams that are very interested.
So you think his price tag would be about $19 million?
SpotTrack has estimated market value at 5 years, $96 million, or about $19.2 million per year. And obviously, just as a primer for any contract.
Understood.
Right, like it doesn't have to be 19 every year.
And Clowney is about, what, 21?
21, 22.
That's
Clowney
not,
will
that's
undoubtedly
not really
that
get... much difference, though, is it?
Maybe. I mean, but then you have to look at what would guaranteed money be.
Okay, all right. But
so,
just
I mean,
per year.
Be.
All right.
Right,
yeah.
And I'll give you some context to this. SpotTrack had Russell Wilson's deal, if I'm not mistaken, he had it valued at 34, 33 and a half, somewhere in there, before he got his $35 million deal. So it just gives you a pretty good rough estimate. So it could be a million or two more past that. So with Clowney, mm-hmm. you're saying 21, possibly could be 22 somewhere okay. in that
yep.
area.
Third down. Jake, what does DJ Humphrey's 3-year, $45 million deal mean for Jermaine Ifedi?
Well, Jermaine Ifedi is going to get paid. I don't think there was any doubt about that. When you look at his 5-year option, his dollar value for that was going to be around $10 million, $10.5 million, and the Seahawks declined that. Now, in the open market, there's just not a ton of right tackles out there that are worth looking at. And Jermaine Ifedi, for all of his struggles that he's had here in Seattle, he's been healthy. He started every game. He has improved at different points in time. He is a solid run blocker, not a great pass blocker. Has improved little by little every year in that aspect. And so I would assume that if Humphreys as a left tackle is getting that type of money, that Jermaine Ifedi is looking at anywhere from 10 to $12 million per year. And at $12 million per year, that if you're going to start spending that type of money, I would rather them go all in and get a player like Jack Conklin from the Tennessee Titans.
You just want to say the name Jack Conklin.
Oh, I do, because I want Jack Conklin here. What? I would love to have him as my right tackle.
Sounds like a shell.
Yeah, exactly. The Conk Shell.
Yeah.
It's a great
like
name.
From
That's
Lord
a good,
of,
tough
like from
guy
Lord
name.
Of the Flies.
Very dark book.
Very dark. Jake, you weren't here Friday when we were talking up Josh Gordon. By the way, Stacy crushed that segment.
Thanks.
Had no doubt.
How do you see him? Do you see him at all on the Seahawks roster in 2020?
I actually do. If Josh Gordon is available and he is able to come off suspension, I think Josh Gordon is on the Seattle Seahawks roster. The Seahawks have the first crack at him in terms of his rights, and I think that they really liked him in the building, that they really appreciated how he conducted himself, how he was on the football field, and the talent that he is. And so they're not bringing him on to be the number one, even number two receiver, but at receiver, you know, possibly number four. If you draft a guy and have him, you know, 3 and 4, I think that could be a really interesting situation with Josh Gordon, and it's going to be a cheap option. I mean, you think about it, his price tag is going to be somewhere near the same amount as it is for David Moore right now. So to me, it's if you're not really banking on him being a guy and that you're going ahead and drafting him like he's not going to be there, and then you kind of get that added bonus as your fourth receiver, why not?
I just thought of something, guys, going back to our conversation about Curtis here. Here's why you need to disclose the fact that you were dating somebody in office, okay? What if she...
Tom's been sitting on this one.
No, it just occurred to me, like in the last 30 seconds. What if she were like a big pain and she did something to me or there was an issue, and I just happened to tell you about it.
You're like venting about
it. Yeah, you're like, oh my gosh.
And I'm like, can you believe what? Can I say her name?
Yes.
Brenna did.
Can you believe what Brenna was doing? She said this and she said that. And I say that to you because you're my friend. Like, you're immediately going to pass that right back to her, aren't you?
Yeah.
You probably already have.
I would tell you to tread lightly with where that was. Luckily, that never happened.
Luckily, Brenna's
the sweetest. Yeah, because everyone loves Brenna.
Brenna's a very nice person. Yeah. But I'm saying just theoretically.
Yeah, you're putting people in bad situations.
You're setting them up. Yeah.
And here's the thing. Like, C-Raj bothers me so much.
Yeah,
like,
same.
He irritates me to no end that, like, very easily I could have talked trash to Brenna about Curtis.
That's what I worry about.
And that's when I found out. I thought, man, did I say something about Curtis? No, I didn't. Okay, good.
But it's
I wasn't
hard to remember.
I wasn't worried about it being the other way around. It's just, like, what are the bad things that I've been saying about Curtis?
Exactly. After a year... Let's disclose.
Okay.
So next time around, in case this doesn't work out.
I don't think there's going to be a next time, Tom.
You're not going to date anybody else in the office?
No, Tom.
All right.
This is lasting forever,
yes.
Tom.
All right. Well, I hope so.
You're ruining everything.
Hey, everything? Hey, by the way, with the Josh Gordon thing, remember when he was suspended, we talked about how the Seahawks still retained his rights? Does that ring a bell to anybody? Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. How does that work exactly? Like, is he going to hit free agency and then what?
I'm not exactly
with Josh Gordon?
Yeah.
The Seahawks, he will not hit the open market in free agency.
Okay.
The Seahawks will have basically a waiting period that they can claim him off waivers. And so he will, not off waivers, but they can claim him to the roster. So once he is... cleared off of this suspension, this indefinite suspension, the Seahawks have the chance to add him to the roster, and then if they do not, then he becomes a free agent.
Then he is. Okay.
Correct.
So, and we don't know when suspension ends, right?
No. It's
whenever.
It's whenever. No one's talked about it. Roger Goodell hasn't mentioned anything about it. There's no news. So it's really, to me, at this point, is really how Josh Gordon is handling his rehabilitation process and how that is progressing, how that's going, and that to me would result in how soon or how late that you know suspension will be lifted.
We saw what looked like a horrific crash yesterday in NASCAR. I'm going to ask what seems like a very obvious question, but I think a necessary one. We'll do that next in the Halftime Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
The Seattle Dragons won their home opener 17-9 over the Tampa Bay Vipers. Are they the Tampa Vipers or Tampa Bay? That's what I thought. Okay. Even though you know there's no such place as Tampa Bay.
What?
It's not a city.
What do you mean?
It's called Tampa.
Oh, well.
Is this true?
Yes.
The city is Tampa. The body of water is Tampa Bay.
That's true.
Wait.
Like Elliott Bay.
This blows
there's
your
no,
mind.
There's no city named Tampa Bay.
There's not a place in Florida called Tampa Bay.
No,
there's Tampa, Florida.
It's not a municipality.
Of course, you got St. Petersburg.
Why do we call it that?
Just because. I mean, there's no place called Golden State either, but that's where the Warriors are.
Yeah, but Tampa Bay is a place.
In your mind.
It's a body of water.
You can
jump
into it, but nobody lives in it.
Why do we have so many teams named Tampa Bay?
It's a wild thing. It's crazy.
Why?
I just wanted everybody to know that.
See, you learn something every day.
Anyway, the Tampa Bay Vipers fell nastily to the Seattle Dragons 17-9. Most of us were there on Saturday having a heck of a time. By the way,
everything is a lie.
Those towels that they handed out, those orange towels, I know the Steelers invented those with the terrible towels, right? They were the first.
I think they use it. They're the most often
the most
associated
with it.
I mean, everybody does it now. The Minnesota Twins had their Homer hankies. But when you get those things going at a big spot in the game and it's loud, that is awesome. I love being part of that crowd. Great job by everybody there, including the Seattle Dragons. But it looks like we need to change a quarterback.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to saying that we need a change. Something needs to change, whether it's Brandon Silver's play or eventually making that happen. Because in week three, you're getting to this point in the season where, you can get a pass. You get a pass in week one. Week two, maybe. But some of those throws he had, I mean, they're open. They're open, and you've got to make them. You've got to hit them. And Jim Zorn's dialing it up. Now in week three, there really is no excuses. You're in the flow of play. You're getting used to your team. So things have got to start happening on the offensive side for the Seattle Dragons, or you got to start looking for different options.
Defensively, it was a good performance, though. I think it was it was fitting, and I think a nice send-off for them that final play was an interception right in the end zone. Crowd went absolutely wild. Really cool way to end it. I'm just Googling Tampa. I want to be in this conversation.
Stacey's mind is blown by this.
I've truly lived my entire life from the day that I was born until right now in this moment or a minute ago thinking that Tampa Bay was a city in Florida.
That's not something that everybody knows, though. I think I didn't find that out until maybe 10 years ago.
And you didn't tell me?
I didn't know you. Hey, by the way, when you're in the audience at a game and you don't hear, like the stuff that they say in the press box about what the play actually was, that play where Tampa botched the field goal attempt and then the Dragons jumped on it, I thought from where we were sitting, it was a fake field goal attempt.
Oh, really?
So when you're in the audience, how do you always know, what's happening on the field?
Well, it's probably just from your vantage point, right? Like, the vantage point of where you were, how you saw the play, and if you had a better view of it, you would have seen that the holder kind of was fumbling with the ball because the snap wasn't good at all.
Right, but there's no way to confirm that, I guess, unless you get on your phone immediately and look up what happened on the play.
True, but also just watching the mechanics of a field goal over time, I mean, usually everything is pretty clean cut.
I get that, Jake. I'm just saying, when it's unexpected, A. B, it happens very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, all I'm saying is, if in the pre-cell phone era, if you were sitting in the crowd and you see some of these plays happen, maybe you don't know if it's a fumble or if it's incomplete or if it's a fake field goal
Did they have a replay going on up in the Jumbotron?
I was too busy celebrating.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right, next. The Mariners' full squad reports to Peoria today. Hey, you know what I was thinking? Kyle, you and Salk and Brock always talk about how there's nothing down there in Peoria around it other than maybe golf courses and things like that. The Cactus League really kind of gets the shaft because in Florida, the Grapefruit League, all those different cities where those teams play, in Clearwater, Fort Myers, there's a million cool things to do if you're on vacation down there.
Little trade-off, I think. The nice thing about the Cactus League is the proximity. Every ballpark is within half an hour of each other.
Okay, so you don't have to drive multiple hours up and down.
Yeah, they got players on a bus for 3 hours and then back. But yes, I know your point. And that's specifically Peoria. It's kind of in this northwest corner. There's not a lot of
I don't know why
culture,
you guys,
so to speak.
There's a lot of stuff there.
Where? Peoria?
Yeah, I've been there before. I've been to Sun City. There's an Applebee's. There's a nice Walgreens. It's a really big Walgreens. It's one of those Walgreens. When you go in and you can get almost anything. There's a Joann.
There's a Macy's furniture store.
You're a big defender of Peoria. I feel like you've got a stake in the city.
There's plenty of car dealerships nearby.
That's right.
But in Phoenix proper, there's a lot going on. But yeah, from Peoria, you may just have to drive, 15, 20 minutes. But once you're in Peoria, at the Mariners facility, fantastic, great ballpark, great place to catch a game. But after that, you may have to, head down to Scottsdale or something for the nightlife. Yeah, it's fine. A little trade-off.
What's wrong with the nightlife in Sun City?
Well, it's good nightlife, but it from 7
p.m.
Yeah, I was going to say.
In the retirement community that you're talking about?
Yes. They're special.
When last time I went out to Sun City, my grandma, we visited her. She invited us to dinner, and dinner was at 3:30.
Jeez.
No, that's true. We were at my in-law's retirement community. We went to the restaurant 5:30. Could we get dinner? And not all jokes aside, he said we stopped serving dinner at 5. And we were like,
you ever play bingo out there?
Oh, okay.
Yes. Stop serving dinner. Fine.
Well, it's a 65 and older community. They just, it wasn't worth it for them to operate late night like that.
Wow.
It's a great place.
What time does the sun go down?
About 5. Yeah.
It goes down that early?
Well, I don't recall. But, you know, metaphorically speaking, the sun,
Kyle,
it all
for some reason, Kyle can't seem to remember.
Yeah, I don't know.
Next. We had a car crash at Daytona yesterday. Couple of crashes, actually. As of right now, Ryan Newman, he's okay, right?
He is awake and communicating with doctors.
All right, that's good.
Scary.
Now, here's my question about racing. Crashes may appall us, but they're also one of the main reasons that people are attracted to the sport. I've never understood this. Now, as Salk was saying, the way that those guys are protected in the cars is unbelievable. It's almost impossible to die, so that's good news. But if you're fascinated by the crashes and you're at the same time appalled by it, how is that possible? How are you reconciling those two things in your head?
Maybe in the sense that there are different levels of crashes. There are the life-threatening crashes that you see, and then there are, you know, just guys competing and really no harm, no foul type of situation. Although it's scary and it's reckless, you know, in terms of the driving that occurs when those are happening. I mean, you got to look at it in terms of the severity of the crashes, but It's interesting to me that Ryan Newman, you talk about the safety, Ryan Newman's been a guy all throughout his career that's actually gone after NASCAR about the lack of safety.
And, I thought it was ultra safe.
Well, not according to Ryan Newman. I mean, talking about two decades that he has gone after NASCAR about how they can be better at protecting the racers. And, you know, he's been in a couple different accidents himself in Talladega, and also in Daytona before this. So it's interesting. When you say it's not life-threatening, to me there's a big difference in degree of that. Like, not life-threatening in terms of dying, but it sounds like he just woke up and man, sound like a pretty serious injuries that he sustained.
Yeah, I think some of the comparisons, I'm seeing it on the text line, and I think it's a similar one that I draw with football, is there are a lot of football hits that are celebrated, and you hear the whole crowd go, ooh,
right.
It's this collective kind of appreciation of it. But then there are some that are a little scarier. And it's the same thing where not every single football game is someone carted off or goes to a hospital in an ambulance. And when football fans are questioned and someone might say, well, you watch this really violent sport and you know it. I mean, I cover football for a living and I know it's a violent sport. At the same time, I'm not expecting that to happen every single game. And when it happens, there's just this pit in your stomach when you can tell it happens on the field and the crowd gets really quiet and everyone kind of holds their breath. So I think it's something there, like Jake said, there are levels to it. And in a violent sport or a sport that's a bit dangerous, it's always a risk, but people don't love it because it happens all the time. They love it because most of the time it doesn't happen.
That's true. You're both right. I mean, there are different degrees of violence that take place specifically in football. I mean, I question myself. I was watching the replay the other night of Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury, and I'm saying to myself, why do I like this sport? I mean, I don't follow it like I did when I was a kid, but two guys just beating each other up, or MMA or whatever, I mean, that's why would anybody watch any of that? And we do.
It's brutal.
Tyson Fury, the Gypsy King. You know his brother was on Love Island? Just a fun fact.
No.
Tyson Fury's brother?
Mm-hmm.
What's his name?
Tommy. He's also a boxer.
Is he really Tommy Fury?
Yeah.
Is he as obnoxious as Tyson Fury?
No.
He's less
not.
Obnoxious?
He's not.
See, Tom, as you taught Stacy about Tampa
now
Bay.
Now I'm teaching you
about
Tyson Fury's fellow boxing brother.
Reality
Tommy.
Show star.
Love Island.
Very nice.
Is that the one where they switch partners?
Kind of. I'll explain it to you during the break.
That's Temptation Island.
Yeah.
That was a heck of
Love
a
Island's
show.
So much better.
It's
complicated.
Coming up next, are we going to do this Aubrey Huff sound?
Buckle up.
I don't know.
You know what?
We'll find out.
We'll maybe we'll save that one for later. The Oakland A's are abandoning a like 100-year baseball tradition, and I have no idea why. We'll talk about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Little Mariners news here. I guess it's good. According to Shannon Dreher, Mitch Haniger's back surgery went well. He is expected to be in camp tomorrow, which to us means he will arrive in camp tomorrow. I don't know if that means he'll be in uniform. I'm assuming if he just got over a surgery, he's not going to be doing too much running around.
I would
picture him getting wheeled in like Paul Pierce.
Right.
Like, and here's Mitch. And he's just like in a wheelchair.
And everybody's like,
IV cart still hooked up to him. Maybe in a gown.
Yeah. Poor guy. Like, I feel so bad.
You think he's going to be in scrubs?
Yeah, like one of those.
Why would he be in scrubs?
Because he just had surgery.
But he'd be in the gown.
Whoever's
wheeling his wheelchair would be in scrubs.
I thought he was doing this.
He shows up with like
it's
actual
Dr. Mitch.
Hello.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Mitch.
I did my own surgery.
Yeah, right. I'd recommend against that.
Give me a bottle of ether and a scalpel. I'm going to fix this thing.
Anyway, bottle of ether. I forgot to mention it's 1924.
Ah, man.
One way or another, he's going to be there in Peoria, so good for him. How about this story? This has been going on and on and on and on and on, and it's unfortunately been resurrected. This Mason Rudolph versus Myles Garrett story where Myles Garrett accuses Mason Rudolph of having used the N-word prior to him ripping Mason Rudolph's head off or helmet off and hitting him with it. Now we've got Mike Tomlin defending Mason Rudolph.
These allegations returned this past weekend. I thought it was appropriate that Mason is properly defended. It was a thorough investigation done by us and the National Football League. I don't think that was represented during that piece. These accusations are serious, not only in terms of Mason Rudolph's character, but his professional pursuits. Nobody on that field as a member of the Cleveland Browns or the Pittsburgh Steelers corroborated what was said by Myles Garrett. That was founded by us and the National Football League. And at no point during that piece this weekend, that was stated.
But Myles Garrett, from what it sounds like, is sticking by this come hell or high water.
It's interesting in this situation because the stance that Myles Garrett is taking is just kind of confusing to me. The reason why it's confusing to me is because I would like to take him at his word, right? I would like to take him at his word and say that happened and, it doesn't excuse any of his actions, but okay, here's the situation and here's kind of where it all started. But this was not, as Mike Tomlin said, this wasn't even part of the discussion in the immediate reaction. If Myles Garrett responded in this way because on top of Mason Rudolph trying to pull off his helmet, that Mason Rudolph used the N-word, then that would be something that he would be saying to all of his teammates and to everybody around him in the moment, right? Like that would be a normal, appropriate response to that, saying, hey, this guy said this. It doesn't excuse what I did, but there was no talk of that. No talk of that until later. And obviously they've done an investigation. I think people are suspicious as to how much information the NFL or the Steelers would actually, divulge if they did find anything. But I would like to think that they would ultimately, if it came down to this, that Mike Tomlin would not be going on ESPN to defend Mason Rudolph if there was any shred of this being a legitimate possibility in terms of having evidence.
Well, and it's a little tricky because it's not like this person who's been ousted by the league and no one respects or believes, and he's, had this ruined reputation. Myles Garrett was a respected player. I know he's a young player, but a respected player, really smart guy, someone people rallied around, spoke with Mina Kimes, who's a very well-respected journalist with ESPN, huge outlet, respected outlet, and went on the record with them. So it's hard because it's you have to think that they did their research. Obviously, they can't uncover audio files that were within a game, but you have to think that they believe it or that they at least think he is credible enough to warrant telling his side of the story.
Wait, but just because he did an interview with them, that doesn't mean that they believe
it. Here's what Miles Garrett told Mina Kimes.
I mean, he called me the N-word. He called me a stupid N-word. I don't like, man, I don't say the N-word, whether it's, you know, with A, E-R. To me, personally, just shouldn't be said. And whether it's known by family, friends, anyone. And I don't want to use it because I don't want to, you know, find that appropriate around me for anyone to use.
It doesn't mean that they believe him, but you don't just give anyone a platform.
Why?
Like, if someone seems clear, because it's irresponsible journalism.
No,
if
it isn't just to do an interview?
Yeah. If someone is clearly an unstable person who no one believes, why do I want to spread whatever he's saying? Like, they have to, it's not, I'm not saying they necessarily believe Miles Garrett. I'm saying that you have to at least have some credibility, which I think he does, and he does with not just clearly ESPN, but around the league. And I don't know what opinions have changed since his altercation, but you don't just give a platform to anyone. I think that, I'm not saying ESPN has evidence, but I'm saying it makes it more complicated to me.
He's the subject of a major story, though. I don't know that his credibility matters. People want to hear from him. That's why ESPN.
Yeah, but it's not like
that's why ESPN has Mina Kimes doing this interview.
I know, but it's not like Aubrey Huff, where we were just talking about him and how he mostly just does kind of like trolly things, where you don't even know if he believes what he's saying, and some people aren't willing to give him a platform. Like, I don't think ESPN would give anyone a platform.
That's why this is such an interesting situation here, and really kind of unprecedented in the standpoint of you have a player who, in his immediate reaction, did not mention the use of this word in this altercation. Not saying that that doesn't mean it didn't happen, but now you have an investigation that goes into it. Once he did come out, I think it was maybe even a week later, a couple days later. I forget the exact timeline of the situation, but now you get into this, and now you're trying to find evidence of this happening. You can't find it. You have conversations, and so from the Steelers' standpoint, they are adamantly defending Mason Rudolph, and Miles Garrett isn't backing down from his statements. So
I'll tell you what, if I were Mason,
one's lying and one
right. That's exactly right, and you don't know who it is. If I were Mason Rudolph, and I know that I didn't do that, I would sue this guy.
He had a lawyer already put out a statement saying that this is defamation of character, and he has opened himself up to litigation.
Exactly, he's slandering him, and he got hit over the head with a helmet. I mean, that's assault and slander. Mason Rudolph should absolutely sue him. But if he doesn't,
that's telling
in itself.
Yeah. I mean, if I were in Mason Rudolph's position, I've been assaulted and I've had my character defamed. Yeah, I'm absolutely going after him.
Especially when it comes to, you know, people around the country having, you know, like you said, defamation of character. If your name, if your opportunities are limited because of this and what Miles Garrett is saying, you have to take action. You have to do everything you can, not just from a public perception, but more importantly, within your own locker room.
We've got another huge position, another guy we need to address with the Seattle Seahawks. We do that next with our profile daily at 2 o'clock every day, 710 ESPN Seattle.